and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. Today I talked to Mayor Chris White, whose main job is leading the Guelph Aramosa Township Council, but along with those responsibilities, he's required to serve on a number of other boards and committees, including the Grand River Conservation Authority, on which he presently sits as chair. White's new gig comes at a difficult time for conservation authorities across Ontario. The pandemic? Well, yes, that's part of it. Conservation authorities can't take part in their usual programming, and they've lost normally dependable funds because of that. Plus, there are all the new precautions that they have to take in terms of cleaning and physical distancing. That's just the beginning, though, of the current headaches befalling the GRCA board and other conservation authorities. The view from the board is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. Back in November, the Ontario government announced the 2020-2021 provincial budget, and like their previous budget, there was some very non-budget-related stuff in the fine print. Schedule 6 of the budget bill, Bill 229, took away some autonomy from the province's 36 conservation authorities, including a clause that forced those authorities to issue permits at the insistence of the minister. It was the latest instance of the current provincial government's intention to undermine conservation authorities, and it was instantly the subject of a lot of criticism from the likes of Guelph MPP Mike Schreiner, local councils like Guelph's own city council, and the GRCA's previous chair, Region of Waterloo councillor Helen Jowett. Chris White was Jowett's vice chair on the GRCA board, and he must now manage the aftermath of December's passage of Bill 229 and the work going forward with a new working group that the province announced to implement changes to authorities, this time with their consultation. White may be ideally skilled to navigate these complex waters, having served as the mayor of Guelph Aramosa since 2006. He was warden of the County of Wellington from 2011 to 2014, and he's been a member of various boards, including Wellington Dufferin Guelph Public Health, the Rural Ontario Municipal Association, the Ontario Rural Council, AMO's Rural Caucus Board of Directors, and OMAFRA's Panel on Rural Policy. He's been part of the GRCA board since 2014, but this complex situation is a lot to deal with for someone with less than 2 months under his belt as the Conservation Authority's chair. So how is he coping? That's one of the questions we'll put to Mayor White on this week's new episode of the Guelph Politicast. White will talk about why the GRCA is so important to him, the current stresses they are facing from the pandemic, and how they are coping with the rapidly changing situation with that. On the issues with the province, White will talk about the GRCA's relationship with other authorities, why he intends to proceed with the working group in good faith, and the legitimate issues concerning the management of conservation authorities that really do need to be addressed. And finally, White will discuss the differences between politics and management when it comes to the issues, how sometimes you have to go along to get along, and about his goals and concerns for 2021. So I caught up with Mayor Chris White a couple of weeks ago via Zoom. So Mayor Chris White, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for the invitation. I appreciate it.
To begin with, why don't you, you are the new chair of the Grand River Conservation Authority. Perhaps you can start by talking a bit about what the authority means to you and why you see that as an important role and one that you wanted to fill as the chair.
Well, conservation authorities, especially in our neck of the woods, are an integral part of our community. Absolutely. So I've been mayor now since about 2006 and warden, sat on AMO, Roma, did a bunch of different things. And I realized over time that municipal governance is a huge puzzle. And there's a lot of agencies and a lot of interactions that go on. And the more you can branch out and the more you can get involved in other aspects of the community, the better job you can do. So in our neck of the woods, we've got Rockwood Conservation. We've got the park at Guelph Lakes. Just from a recreational perspective, they're hugely important for our communities. But from an environmental and a property perspective, I mean, just to net it out, the origin of conservations is flood control. That was the original purpose. They were to conserve the community against ravaging of floods started in the early 50s. And you can see that with the Guelph Dam, and we've got several dams and reservoirs throughout the whole watershed. It's a very large watershed with 38 municipalities. So I got on the board because as the I would be we have a representative for Guelph, Aramasa, Push Lynch, and Erin. There's one representative. So I got on there a few years ago and watched the way the board went. And I just decided it was something I would like to chair. We haven't had a chair from our region in a while. It's been, you know, dominated a little bit by the larger urban area. So, but we work very well together. It's one of the best boards I've sat on. There isn't a lot of politics. They're actually working hard for the community. And I just thought it might be a nice place to be, especially now that you've had this new legislation and so forth. I've got some experience in working with the province and so forth. So I thought it might be, I might be able to help the board and help the conservation and help our community.
It's interesting to hear you say as a board and as one of the numerous boards you've served on, there's not much politics. Now it has become very political indeed. And it's almost,
let me just be clear there. I meant the internal politics of the board.
Right. Okay.
When you've got 26 people if you have 26 people in a municipal governance, for example, the county's perfect example, 16 members, large county, 7 townships, works very well together, but occasionally territorial things crop up. And in fact, and I'm not blowing smoke here, we've been very lucky in this area because councils typically get along, boards typically get along, having, you know, and I'm still a member of the Rural Ontario Municipal Association board, you hear and see councils and townships and conservation authorities that frankly don't operate so well, and they become political and they become personal and stuff. You're not serving your community very well when you're having these petty little feuds. And so when I got up on a board as large as conservation with 26 members from a very diverse geography, I would have expected to maybe see some little local protections, and it's not the case at all. The board works extremely well together. The staff is good. So it's a pleasant board to sit on because we're not wasting our time with little personal agendas. They're actually trying to do the best for the community. Now, that doesn't mean to say that from a provincial level with the change in legislation, that hasn't got into part of the what's going on at the provincial political level. Mm-hmm. But of course, our role is not to engage in the politics of the provincial parties and so forth. Our goal is to, as it is municipally, to serve our community. We will do what works best for the community. It doesn't matter who's in government. We work with who's ever in government, and we try to advise them as best we can to steer, you know, the ship in the right direction.
So what you're kind of getting at there, I find interesting because, I mean, all politics are kind of partisan now, at least when you're a member of a party, perhaps not so much at the municipal level where we don't have parties, but I mean, when you were talking about the Grand River Conservation Authority, numerous members of provincial parliament represent this area, and you have the leader of the Green Party representing one area, you have the current Speaker of the House representing another portion of the area, you have an independent MPP representing the Cambridge portion of the area. Does it make it feel like maybe one of two ways, like the GRCA board is both kind of like a broker that can bring various political sides together because there's so much political input from the province in terms of the different parties. But does that also create stresses? Because, I mean, you all have different members represented by different members who might have different goals too.
So it's important to remember that when you sit on a board, you wear a specific hat. In fact, one of the difficulties when this new legislation came forward, they were saying primarily your goal would be to represent the municipality or whoever appointed you to the board. That was your priority, certainly from a budget perspective. And then the conservation came second. Well, that's one item we pushed very, very much. We pushed back on that. And that holds. I sit on the Board of Health, and we had some issues a few years ago where certain municipalities were overlapping municipal responsibilities with Board of Health responsibilities. So when I sit on the GRCA, I am definitely a member of my municipality. But first and foremost, I'm a conservation board member, and that's the priority. So the politics in terms of at the provincial level kind of melts away. So it's not like you would deal with Mike Schreier or Ted Arnott in any different capacity other than here's what we think is good for conservation. Here's what we think is good for the GRCA. And frankly, it's just common sense in any event. You don't want to get into any political squabbles because you never know, and this works for municipally, you never know who's going to be in office. They are duly elected members of their representative parties. They have all the rights and privileges, as we all do, but we try to steer away from any partisan political activity. It's not helpful, it doesn't work, and it could put you in a bind going forward. What we try to do is say, hey, you're thinking of doing this, we think this might work better, and we'll work with whoever. We've had various people from the feds, the federal government, and the provincial government, and different municipalities come to GRCA meetings and present particular points of view. And we're very clear that we're for the word, a nonpartisan board. And that is pretty much the way the board operates. And occasionally you'll get a local issue that can be very controversial, right? A quarry somewhere or things like that. And some local folks want to pull you into the politics of it. And we don't do that. We do the job, we follow the process, we give advice. Ultimately, the goal is to protect the conservation and its mandates and protect the community. And that's what we strive for the good of conservation, which is then part of that greater puzzle of our community. If the parks are working well and we're not being flooded and we're planting trees, that's good for everybody.
How hard is that to keep the politics out, though?
It's, you know what, part of that, as I said earlier, that's experience. So when you're first elected or you're first doing these jobs, sometimes it's kind of exciting and you want to get involved and you want to get into the trenches. But you realize very early on, if I was to be overtly political partisan, for example, and a series of grants are coming forward, there's a lot of grants. Some of them are population-based. Some of them are competitive. They're application-based. And if you become known as a particular municipality, an individual that's got a particularly overt bias, you may not get that grant, depending on who's in the office. I'm not saying that would happen. I'm saying that's part of, and you may not get as much influence. You need to be respectful of who's ever in power and the rest of the parties. And if you, we absolutely cannot become partisan. If you do, you're not doing the job. So, I mean, you may have internal, geez, I don't like that party, or I don't like this thing, but that's just human, right? Everybody's got that. But I've learned with the municipal experience that your best course is to treat everybody with respect, appreciate the reviews they've got, and then try to get your point across. But you do not want to take up, if you want to take a particular political party bias on something, you should run for provincial office then, because that's not the, this isn't the place.
I think that's something that we kind of misunderstand, is that, when you're the kind of further you go down the government chain, from the federal government to the provincial government to the local government, and then the local boards that feed into the local government, the kind of less, I guess you don't have as many blunt instruments you can wield, and you have to be kind of keenly aware of what the limitations are. And I guess too, just the general interactions of people and how humans work, that people can be petty, and it's better to go along to get along, I guess.
Well, I mean, politics in many ways, you need to compromise, and there are gray areas, and there are, things aren't black and white, and there's history and there's experience, and there's, if you're setting a precedent, it's a complicated, it's simple, but it's not, it's complicated. So when you're doing things, you want to make sure that what you're doing currently doesn't affect what you're doing in the future. And right, so it's to some degree the wrong word, it's the art of compromise. You've got a lot of folks around, you've got to take the information, you've got to take, a key component of this is respect for staff. We have very good staff here. I've always had very good municipal staff, and we're, dependent on them because they're the experts and the professionals. And it's really important that you have the delineation between the folks who put the reports together and suggest here's where you might want to go. At the end of the day, though, the politicians have to make the decision they think is best and then wait for staff to implement them. So you've got that fine line there that helps to support the way you're going. So all of that said, when you get a report from staff, you're going to take their best advice, but you don't want to politicize it. You want to make sure that you're making the best decision for everyone.
So can you describe a bit about like the relationship between the board and the GRCA staff in terms of how that works? Yeah, I mean, 'cause I think many of the people who listen to this podcast are political people who have sat on boards and understand,
So,
the way different boards work. But can you just describe how the GRCA
sure.
works?
And it's a fairly common element. And I think that, and I keep referring to municipal because that's where my experience goes, county or local. There's a fairly standard way this works. So if I have a municipality or a member of the GRC board, theoretically the board has one employee, and that's the CAO. So when you're dealing with staff, the person the board hires is the CAO, same in a municipality. So when you're working through staff, board members, if there's issues they want to address, should bring them through the CAO. You don't want counselors or board members drilling down into operations, going down, you know, inside the organization to try to direct staff as to what to do. That does not mean conversations don't take place. It doesn't mean you can't ask questions. But in general, anything that's of any substance or you want reports, they need to go through the CAO, because staff, you know, they're professional employees, but sometimes, you know, some politicians and stuff can get a little bit, you know, aggressive with staff and try to lean on them to do certain things. And it puts them in a bind because they're with elected officials and they need to respect that. So it puts them in an awkward position. So generally the way it works is we have, and I don't mean we don't have all the other employees, but I mean, reporting right. directly to us is the CAO. And that's the person who we need to filter stuff back through to staff. Now, depending on how far up in the hierarchy they are as well. So if we're hiring a department head or a director, quite often we're involved in decisions around that. But the farther down you go, the less involvement there is. But that in no way inhibits a board member from getting across any point, any question, anything they want to ask. One of the good things about the GRC, the boards are very open and very, we have fulsome discussions. People can bring stuff forward all the time. Of course, you're generally restricted to your agenda because it's only fair to the publics that they know what's coming. Mm. But if a member of the board wants to bring something up, they can bring it up and that gets put onto the next meeting, or a report will come forward, or if there's concerns. And ultimately, if there were actually staffing concerns and so forth, you would deal with that internally and deal with those processes. So members of the board have full ability to bring forward whatever issues they've got and have a fulsome discussion at the board, whether that's staff or another issue. And then that works their way back to the CAO, and it may get on the agenda or not. So nobody is ever stifled, but you don't want someone, you don't want me going to the guy doing the plow and say, hey, I want you to plow this road instead of that road.
Right.
I think you're putting that culvert in the wrong place. That's not us. Our job is to direct policy and then let the staff implement.
I think people forget that about politics sometimes, is you are not playing God.
That's exactly, we're here to manage.
Right.
So I think it's important to recognize that I don't own this. Nobody, these are public assets. Mm-hmm. And I think that my role is to help manage it, to try to work with the staff and work with the board to manage the assets. I don't own them. I'm trying to do what's best for the public and for the board to work forward, and we're here and we're gone. But our responsibility is to manage, not as you say, you know, you're in charge and here's what we're going to do kind of thing. You've got to work with people and you've got to have consensus where possible. There are times when you need to lead. That's absolutely true. Our decisions have to be made, but you've got to go through the full process and make sure you vetted it, make the decision. And then a good board carries on. If you've got a controversial issue that can, that reaches a, you know, an end point, because they sometimes do, not always, you have a vote on it, and then you carry on with the next issue, and you have a coffee with the person who was on the opposite side of that discussion. You've got to make sure it doesn't become personal.
Mm-hmm. You make it sound so perfect, Chris, I have to tell you. But
okay, yeah.
I do want to get to Bill 229, but I want to kind of set the table a bit by talking about how the pandemic has affected GRCA operations, and I guess kind of what 2020 look like for the Conservation Authority in terms of how it was affected because of the pandemic. I mean,
it was tough without getting into, you know, individual positions and so forth. Like anybody else, we had lockdowns. It meant, you know, certain staff would either have to find other work or you know, go on layoff. And depending on what part of the GRCA you were talking about. So flood management and reservoir controls and all of that stuff was still in place. I think the most difficult thing that we dealt with, one of the most difficult things. There's two components to this. One is how we dealt with it internally. And we had, the CAOs and the department heads make decisions around what staff would remain, how you would best deploy them and so forth. You wanted to make sure that, you know, the taxpayers' money was being protected and you were getting work for value, and they worked through that. And the offices were closed as they have been in many areas, people rotating in from home. But so that was handled internally, and I think very well done. Not easy to do, but then the other component was the impact on GRC properties with the shutdown. So I can give you examples here in Rockwood where the park would meet capacity because you're trying to limit capacity because of social distancing and the various things. And depending on how the lockdowns came through, we would end up people from Halton and Milton and Brampton and Mississauga pouring up into our townships and into our conservation parks, finding that they couldn't get into the parks and then pouring throughout the community in a way that wasn't necessarily respectful of the guidelines. Mm. I had a scenario over in Everton where we had to put up tollway zones and great big signs because people were going onto properties where they shouldn't have been. There's some swimming and rivers, but they're not parks. They're conservation lands that are not part of the park system that quite often folks and quite often from out of town, the stuff gets put up on Facebook. This is the best place to go. Mm. And they pour in and it there were fireworks and, you know, parties all night and all kinds of things that made it difficult for the locals that we really, really had to look at. And in fact, going forward, one of the biggest challenges the GRC is going to have is with not only the parks, because you may know that Elora, for example, gets full now. And there's cars up and down the road with the population in this area is ballooning, right? Mm. With the places to grow and so forth, there's a lot more folks around and these parks are meeting capacity earlier. And then it's difficult to determine where they're going to go. In addition to that, the GRC owns a bunch of, for the wrong term, passive property. Property that we own, either a result of expropriation for dams or however donated, however it was done historically. And folks assume that because it's public and it's green, we can just go on the property.
Right.
Well, that's not the case. And there's liabilities and there's a whole bunch of issues. So in terms of the pandemic, one of the greatest challenges was people looking for something to do. And I mean, the parks were a really nice place to be able to go to. And I was very much in support of keeping open even our own parks as much as that's possible. But it's a push and it's a stress, real stress on staff, right? Because they're trying to cope. Because frankly, some folks have been unreasonable. Mm. Right? They won't listen and there's garbage and there's noise and there's a lot of that. So it's been tough. And I think one of the things we will be addressing as we go forward are these passive properties, how they're going to be dealt with, right? And how we're going to deal with the parks and the overcapacities. It's a challenge for sure. But in terms of the main core operations, business as usual. All of the flood maintenance, all of the weather reporting, all of that stuff it was maintained and carried on.
I was going to say it might even be more of a challenge when we start getting nice weather in a couple of weeks because people have been locked down longer, that it could present even more of a challenge. People more even more desperate to get out and about and go to local green places when it's nice.
And some of it's going to be a ripple effect because I think that some of the conservations beside us closed their parks before us.
Mm.
So as soon as their parks closed, everybody came to us. And then you ended up with a domino. And I think you're going to have some of that with some of the urban areas, depending on how long they're in lockdown. Because I think, you know, people love to come out here. It's a very, very popular area. But by the same token, on a daily basis, or in a lot of weeks, people like to be local. You like to go to your local park and do your local things. So we're going to have a pretty good challenge until we're all up and out of this.
Mm.
Once we're up and out of this, things should calm down a bit. But I still say the volume of folks is growing. And it's something we need to, because the last thing you want to do are have these parks beaten to death, right? All the paths get worn, all the trees. Like, you've got to maintain some semblance of nature, and human beings don't tend to do very well when they're tromping through in large numbers. So there's a lot of things we need to take into consideration to maintain the integrity of the parks.
So like a lot of groups, the GRCA and the staff are feeling the stress, and then we get to November and the budget, and in the budget there is this Schedule 6 that is looking at sort of, I guess, exerting some new authority over the conservation authority. And in keeping with what we were talking about earlier about collaboration and keeping up good lines of communication, was there any advanced warning that anything like that was going to be coming up in what was basically the budget bill?
Well, yeah, because I think that when they came out of the gate, when they first got elected, they announced there was a series of things they were going to look at. Mm. And I think over the last 13 years of the previous government, again, this is part of my Roma AMO experience, there were, you know, some legitimate concerns about some conservation authorities. And you know, without be like anything in life, some work very well. And I'm not, again, I'm not trying to blow smoke. The GRC has a pretty good reputation. It's a functional conservation authority. Now, I know that if you're operating a small business and trying to do some things, you know, there's a sense that maybe the conservation is at times slow, but part of that is just simple resources, the amount of staff to deal with it. A lot of that is legislation that the province has handed us in order to make sure that, you know, if you're doing a development, it's done properly. But that said, the GRCA recognizes the importance of economic development as well as the maintenance of the environment. There's an absolute balance that can be done there if you do deal with it smartly. So we recognize that business needs to carry on. Those are the folks paying the bills and so forth. So we try to operate well. I think some conservations, you know, takes you 9 months to get a driveway permit, right? And those kinds of things can be very frustrating for our agricultural communities and the rest of it. So are there potential improvements that the conservations can go through? Absolutely. Are some, do some operate better than others? Absolutely. And that goes for any series of boards of health and the rest of it. You'll find good, you'll find bad. So I think that the province had flagged that they had some concerns with the way the conservations were operating, as again, they did with boards of health and other agencies. Mm-hmm. And I think they flagged that initially, and then it kind of went quiet a little bit during COVID, but we knew it was in the room. So when it showed up, I don't think anybody was taken by surprise. I think we knew it was coming.
Right. But I mean,
it may just be that some of the stuff was unexpected. We didn't necessarily have a handle on exactly what those changes were going to be.
Right. Now, I was thinking more of like timing purposes too, because you know, everybody's dealing with pandemic stuff and it's like, wait a minute. We know you're dealing with this other thing, but we also have regulations that we want to change and we want to, you know, alter approvals of certain things. And, you know, we're throwing all this bureaucratic stuff at you when you're just trying to deal with the nitty gritty of like, how do we keep parks open in a safe way, not to mention all the flood control stuff that is part of the GRCA's and other conservation areas responsibilities too. But I mean, it seemed, I guess from people outside who are concerned about environmental policy, it seemed like a particular shot against the conservation authorities, that this is the time we're going to introduce this change to your authority, even as you are dealing with all this other stuff that should be priority.
Well, you know, I'm not going to comment on the timing of when the government wants to bring legislation forward. You know, often times are awkward. I do think that they had put this on the table. The fact that they put it in a budget bill was their decision.
Fair enough.
These are difficult times for a lot of things. And I think people are trying to get various things done. But the timing of this is certainly at their call. And we, as a board dealing with things, let me phrase it this way.
Okay.
We do have connections and contacts through over times that we've developed with various people in politics. The ex-minister sits on our board, the mayor of Cambridge, right? So we do have connections, and I have Ted Arnott. So we've got connections. So as things were coming forward, we were making noises to say, hey, we're not sure about this and we're not happy with that. And can you help us with this? So, I don't think it necessarily impacted the day-to-day operations of the Conservation Authority, because a lot of those things are operational levels for staff. That said, the upper levels, the CAO and board members and so forth, certainly it added to their duties at a time when there's lots going on. But frankly, there's always, you know, there's times when there's lots going on. Pandemic is a little bit different. But all of that said, that's the hand we were dealt. That's the timing they brought it forward. So we're going to, you know, try to deal with it as best we can. It doesn't help to, what we're looking for is resolution in the best way possible. So you don't want to get into a big fight about process matters necessarily. You want to deal with the substance.
Mm-hmm.
So I think then, look, I'll just say this. Initially, I think they had some pretty aggressive changes they were looking for. They seem to have backed off quite a bit. And you know, they've set up a task force. So what we're down to now, frankly, so there were some overarching things around governance and so on and so forth, but the core is two things. One is, what are the core mandates? So I think there's a sense in some cases that boards and agencies begin to have a mission creep.
Mm-hmm.
So you start doing things that are beyond, so we're flood control. So why are you doing that? Like, why do you have a nature center? Why are you doing education? Why are you doing so? And again, other agencies do the same thing. And I think that they thought that that might have been a little too expansive. However, once you go and begin to make the case that planting trees, in fact, does help with flood control, you begin to push your case back. So I think to some degree, they've slowed down, they've backed off, and they've set up a task force that our CAO is actually on at the provincial level, which is absolutely great for us because she knows her stuff. We know our stuff. And so what we're trying to figure out is, going back, core mandates. Who are we as an agency? What's our core? Flood control, and define those for us. And then the detail is the regulations. How do you implement this? What's it going to be? So we're trying to indicate that, frankly, from a GRCA perspective, we thought we were pretty much doing all the right things. We were happy, and I think we were doing good work in the community. So we're trying to preserve a lot of those services that we do maintain. There are concerns and have been concerns brought up by municipalities over the years about the budgeting. So what will happen is the GRCA can, for the wrong, impose or ask for a levy. It's the way the legislation writes. So they come to Gulf Aramas and they say, here's your bill this year. And it's going up 3%, or it's going up, and here's what we're doing. Now, a lot of that bill is driven again by provincial legislation. But that said, some councils push back against that. They didn't like their budgets being affected directly around that. So part of what they're trying to do is say, if you scale it back to just core mandates, you can only do that, you can only use municipal tax levy funding for the core mandates. So if you want to do something outside that, let's say it's an education program, then you're going to have to sign an agreement with the municipality to have them help fund that or carry that out because it's not a conservation authority. Therefore, municipalities who feel conservations are doing things they shouldn't be doing, they don't have to participate. They can decide not to opt in. That's, of course, after the core mandates have been determined at the provincial level. We wouldn't be giving up on anything that we need to do.
But anecdotally, though, because the makeup of the GRCA board, at least, is representatives of area governments who make up the GRCA. Is there a feeling that there are things the GRCA is doing that, I guess that some municipalities don't want to pay for? I mean, or is there just a general feeling that, the GRCA is fulfilling a core mandate with everything it does?
Well, I don't. There's obviously a lot of interpretations and how there have been people go so far as to say eliminate the conservation authorities, right? And what do you do then? You hand over all that planning responsibility and all those assets and all to the local municipalities? I can tell you right now, the last thing our municipality wants is another responsibility, right? It's going to have to get the dams and so forth. They're going to have to get paid for somehow. These things are going to have to be managed and taken care of. So on a high level, the conservation serve a really good purpose for municipalities. That said, if you get into, and I'll just use this as an example, and it's not a comment on whether it's right or wrong. Let's say it's childhood education. So we go into the schools and you take some children out on a trip or have them come to a conservation and you show them how to plant trees. Now you could say that's not a core mandate. Should we be doing that? Is environmental education for our youth a thing that society should be doing and moving forward on, or is that something we should just cut out? So it gets down to those kinds of levels. And then, so then you get into philosophical discussions. If you've got more educated people, maybe they'll do more, they'll be more helpful to the environment, which helps with the overall mandate, right? So some of these things are difficult and they're not black and white and they're interpretive and you have to draw a line. So some councils and municipalities may feel that boards should do exactly what the mandate states and not use any more tax dollars that we can't, that we don't control on issues we don't want you to do. So I think the province may, it's so we're into discussions right now. The province may or may not determine how, what those core mandates are. And then if there are things outside the core mandates you may want to continue doing, well, then those municipalities can sign arrangements with the conservations and carry on. As opposed to where the conservation would just basically do what they were doing. Although we've had an MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, with the county and our municipalities here in Wellington forever. We work really well with the GRC. There are a main support for us in our planning departments and so forth, right? So as long as the system is working properly, it's a great system. If there are dysfunctionality or boards aren't working properly, there are issues. So You don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but you do. There are areas for improvement. Maybe a little more transparency on agendas and minutes and various. There are things. Anything can be improved. I'm not going to even remotely suggest that anybody's perfect.
Right.
I think as an organization in general, we're doing good things. And I think the province is trying to figure out, again, what those core men. And we're at that table trying to help define that.
So you are in. From our conversation, I think people get the impression you are a fairly optimistic person so far as these processes go, but there's nothing baked in the cake, as it were. You know, there is a chance that the working group will come to conclusions that I guess all sides will be a part of, that there will be an agreement about certain sets of areas for improvement, I guess.
Maybe not. You know, I've sat around these tables. So it's not just, so we've got our CA, there's a bunch of other folks around there, AMO's at the table. It's a fairly comprehensive group of people who know what they're talking about. That doesn't mean that there won't be disagreement. Mm. We may, I'll use it as a childhood education planting trees.
Right.
The folks around the table may decide that they really, that's something they want to maintain. And the province or their advice or from other municipalities may say no. So I'm not assuming that any working group or task force has 100% agreement on every issue on the table. What you're trying to do is pick your priorities. Mm. What's the most important? So for example, for us, there was one right out of the gate was this, where your responsibility lay, your fiduciary responsibility. And they were initially going to have it that you represented your municipality first and the board second. Mm. That was one right out of the gate. We said, we can't live with that. But that holds for any board. You can't sit on this board and represent that board. So, and they backed off, like they took that out. So there was things like that that we've changed. So now you're getting into more, again, what's core mandate? What isn't? We'll make our case of the things that we think are. I'm going to, and I know assumption's a bad thing. I assume that the initial assumptions around the core mandates of conservation authorities around flood management and those various things will absolutely be maintained. The question is, it's the broader, again, outreach, tree planting, community engagement, where they protect stuff along the rivers and various things like that. It becomes a debate of how helpful that is. And so we may or may not agree. I'm just happy that we've got a task force discussing it and good people at that table. We'll see what comes out of it.
Okay.
I'm not going to predict anything, but at least we've got an opportunity to talk about it. And I think it matters because, like anything in life, it's important that you talk to the people who have lived it, right? And I, for all the respect for the government and what the ministers and folks are trying to do, you want to talk to conservationists who've lived it and why this means this and why this means that in the broader context. And we'll all come out ahead if we figure this out properly, right?
Right. So putting all that aside or maybe keeping it in mind, you are the new chair of the board. You bring in maybe a new set of eyes too from that position of leadership. Looking ahead through 2021, I guess, what are some of the priorities you think the board is going to be looking at, and maybe what are some concerns? And I guess I can think of a pretty big one right off the bat.
What's that?
Well, the pandemic.
Of course.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're all the pandemic for the wrong way of saying this is it's all intrusive. It's everywhere. Everything we're doing now is on the basis of what you can and cannot do living inside the pandemic. Right. So what we need is the vaccines out there. We need to get beyond where this vaccine is. So we're going to have to live with this for the next little while. There's hope at the end of the tunnel with that. Clearly we're starting to see some vaccines and getting some folks. So, but until that herd immunity or whatever they call it, once we've reached that plateau, we're going to conduct our business as we have done for the last year. And we're functioning. We're doing all of the things that need to be done. I mean, the parks may be a little less open and there's some, you know, the offices are closed. So if you need stuff, you got to get appointments and so forth. Things are a little more difficult. It takes longer to do anything. It's harder. It's difficult to do meetings, but that's everybody right now. It's a pandemic. Everybody's working their way through that. The GRC as an organization though is functioning well in spite of and doing everything we need to do. So the pandemic protocols and so forth are in place. We're all set up to do what we're going to do. So now it's just a matter of managing those. We may have a blip in the summer, again, as we've talked about, overcapacities in the park, and, you know, maybe we need some OPP assistance or municipal. There's a lot of ways we need to look at how we're going to deal with those things. But we had them last summer, so we're ready for them. That aside, and that's, frankly, that's a given. That's where we are right now. So putting that new life we're living aside, our priorities, obviously, are what the outcome of the legislation is going to be. What's your core mandates? How do you define it? What are the regulations going to be? How do you bill for it? And then, you know, how do you, municipalities are absolutely critical to what we do and the partnerships and the relationships. So the priority will be to walk them through what we think the regulations and mandates will be once the province has defined those. So that's our number one priority. And that, of course, is going to bleed into the budget, because as you shift who you are, maybe, or modify, or however this looks at the end of the day, that ultimately goes back to the budget, which I assume, again, assumptions, I assume we're going to have some fairly tight timelines. Governments tend to, once they get something going, they try to, we're going to have some tight timelines around our budgets and around the various issues we're dealing with. But again, we've got a really good board. I've sat on boards that aren't really good, so I'm not just saying that. I've been around where, you know, sometimes it becomes difficult to get things done. That's not the case here. Again, we've got really good people who are dedicated to the conservation, and we've got excellent staff. So I'm hopeful with whatever we end up with at the end of the day, we will try to influence as much as we possibly can through our connections and our MPs and through organizations like AMO, and do the best we can. And then at the end of the day, what we're handed is what we'll deal with. And that doesn't mean if pieces of those don't fit, that we won't continue to try to look for change going forward. Mm-hmm. We're all looking for the best possible outcome here to balance concerns about conservation authorities and mission creep and budgetary concerns with what our job is, which is to protect against flooding and try to make sure that we maintain a good environment.
Mm-hmm. And just before we sign off, I would note that I wrote an article, well, several years ago now, about how, you know, Guelph would have a flood basically every 20, 30 years. And that seemed to come to an end right around the time the GRCA came into existence. So we are the recipients of that good work every spring.
Well, and we appreciate that. And that's, you know what, again, these are all paid for by the taxpayers and supporting these boards. And, you know, and you're absolutely right. That Guelph Lake and that flooding, I mean, I wasn't around 30 years ago, but we all know there were many, many floods. And the bottom line is the system's working. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's more concerns about that going forward. And, you know, flood mitigation is far from, it's the GRCA, and I'm sure the other conservations as well, have a full-time staff monitoring reservoirs and weather and rivers. And, you know, depending on the season of the year, it's a pretty good warning system for the community if things are coming. I mean, it serves a real, the component I didn't speak with, and just as a briefly, the emergency management side of this, right? Giving people a heads up about what's coming and where it might flood and what we can do. And they're constantly monitoring the reservoir flow. So when you've got drought in the summer, you can release water. I mean, there are so many benefits to this system that didn't exist. You take it for granted now, like you do a lot of things in life that work. You don't see it. It's great. Take it away. And you know what? It's I think that you would notice immediately the benefits of having the infrastructure around the conservations. And I think it's been very beneficial. I know some of it was controversial initially around some of the expropriations and so forth, but, you know, things can be difficult. So yeah, I appreciate that comment, and it's absolutely true. And Guelph can stay dry for the next little while.
Well, fingers crossed. Mayor Chris White, we appreciate all your time today, and thank you for everything that you do helping to steward the GRCA board.
I appreciate the invitation, and anytime.
And once again, that was Mayor Chris White. You can learn more about the Grand River Conservation Authority at their website, grandriver.ca. The next meeting of the GRCA Board of Directors just so happens to be this Friday at 9:30 a.m., which is also the general meeting for the GRCA, and you can find the agenda and links to the virtual meeting at their website as well. And that's it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The Guelph Politicast is usually recorded at CFRU at the University Center on the University of Guelph campus. And to learn more about CFRU, go to cfru.ca. You can download the Guelph Politicast on Wednesday from Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. You can download it from the host Podbean at guelphpoliticast.podbean.com. And while you're there, you can subscribe to the Guelph Politicast channel and get an episode of Open Sources Guelph on Mondays and an episode of End Credits on Fridays. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson or at Guelph Politico. You can go to Guelph Politico on Facebook, which you can find at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And if you'd like to help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph, please consider donating to Guelph Politico. And you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. For all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.ca, where there will be a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you next week. And until then, we will see you next time.